According to a study conducted by Genpact, 50% of working women leave their jobs to take care of their children after childbirth. Even among those who manage to return, 48% drop out within 4 months of rejoining. If your career took a hit post-maternity, or you are an expectant career woman, or you're just planning a baby soon, you might want to stay on and watch this episode. I am Neha Sood, and welcome to Meet the Mom podcast. Today, we will discuss why pregnancy becomes a career exit point for women, especially in India. Is it the lack of a support system at home? Or is the workplace just not a conducive environment for new mothers? Our guest today will help us understand and answer these burning questions. And wait, we will not just harp upon the problem. We will try to find a solution and provide the same to you. The women joining us today have been on similar journeys, and they've managed to build successful careers and stay true to themselves. There's nothing more left for me to do but to introduce my first guest, Vaishali Sharma. She's a seasoned brand communications professional with an experience of over 15 years. Vaishali was amongst the lucky few who managed to join her full-time role after her maternity leave. However, she soon realized that the workplace is not just unsupportive, but rather hostile towards new mothers. Faced by these challenges, this led her to build a purpose-led community of moms, the Champa Tree. As the founder of Champa Tree, she is trying to change the face of working mom status. And through the Real Moms initiative, she features heartbreaking ordeals that real moms go through with the hopes that it will encourage readers to stay motivated and stay strong. Vaishali, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure, and it's a very, very important topic, and we need to address this. So thank you, Team Rabbitat, for taking this initiative.
Thank you so much, Vaishali. And I completely agree with you that this is a topic that needs to be spoken more about, especially by women like yourself, and professional women who are facing it, really, who are facing all these challenges getting back to work post-maternity. Before we move on, let me introduce my second guest, Simran Oberoi. An HR professional with over 19 years of experience, she's worked with leading corporates such as Hewitt Associates and PwC. She's a relentless professional. Simran rejoined work 4 months post-delivery and worked full-time till her child turned 1.5. Instead of getting bogged down by the pressures of motherhood, she never let it rob her of her professional ambition. She stayed connected with her career through freelance opportunities, and she learned new skill sets. She went on to set up a healthy baking social enterprise and award-winning global community, a wonderful Mother Bakers community, which was recognized by Sheryl Sandberg, Facebook's global COO. Thank you, Simran. We are so glad you could take the time to join us today.
Thank you so much, Neha, for having me here. What Vaishali said, I think I will pretty much repeat that I think this is a much needed area that we need to talk more about, because I think there's some slow change that has happened in the last few years, but I think by and large, there's a lot that needs to be done.
Yes, you're absolutely right. I think when you guys took your maternity leave or the break that you had taken back then, things were different, and they are changing slowly but surely. We also see that companies are becoming more inclusive, they're becoming more conscious. Since you are an expert in the field of inclusion and diversity, maybe you can tell us more about what is changing in the corporate world or the workforce to retain more mothers or to retain this huge resource that we have of Indian women.
So I think, you know, what is happening really is that organizations are realizing that, inclusion and diversity are not two different things, okay? Can't do inclusion without diversity, can't do diversity without inclusion. The problem that was happening in India was that most organizations started with diversity and they didn't know what to do after that. So they would go out, hire women, okay, for example, right? So, you know, because they needed to tick a box and say that, okay, we have hired 10, 15, 20 women and we are filling the gap, the pipeline, whatever, and we are very diverse. But subsequently, they were not doing things that would keep those women in the workforce. They were not training their managers or sensitizing their managers. They were not creating a bias-free environment. They were not creating a safe workplace. So, I mean, if you're not doing those additional things, then doing just the first part without the second was a challenge. But in the last few years, like I say, you know, I think there's a little bit of change in terms of how women are perceived from a subconscious mindset. Like, you know, so when you're returning to work also, so I returned to work. So I worked for 11 years, then I worked independently for 7 years, rejoined work early last year. So almost 1.5 years ago. It took me 7 years. And I say this very clearly, I went on a forced break. Okay, because at that point in time, there was no support structure, there was no organizational awareness of the fact that, you know, moms needed support, not just from their families, they also needed that support from their organizations. And that, you know, you can't be assessing or judging somebody's performance based on their parenthood. You know, so those kind of things, conversations, nobody was having. Now I see a lot more of those conversations happening.
You're absolutely right. In fact, I had this conversation with Vaishali as well. And she mentioned how when she had just returned to work, people would get smoke breaks, multiple smoke breaks. But when she told her managers that I need to block my calendar for pumping, it was frowned upon. That is infuriating. That there is no, I'm like you said, that it seemed just like an eyewash, that we're hiring women and, you know, we have a 50-50 ratio. That's the dream, but we are getting there, but you're not doing much to retain them, or you're not even like, you're not acknowledging the life stage that they're at. And it just doesn't end at women. I think even men, if we stop looking at it as a mother problem and look at it as a problem, as a parent problem, we will be able to include more men in this, and they will also be able to reach out to their superiors that, hey, I need to pick up my child, or my child is sick and I need to stay in and I need those flexi hours. What are your thoughts on this, Vaishali, borrowing from your personal experience?
So I do, want to thank HR experts such as Simran, because they are consciously making an effort to have inclusivity as a part of the hiring policy. That said, I still feel that in our country, we are way, way, way behind. Women are languishing every day in the hands of leaders who continue to prioritize profit over psychological safety or emotional, physical, and mental health. In fact, mental health has become such an important topic which needs to be addressed in so many. I mean, I think 10 podcast sessions will also not be enough. Now, think from the point of view of mental health of, say, someone who's pregnant and is reporting to work every day. The issue lies in the fact that the first 3 months, the trimester, is the hush-hush period where women typically do not want to walk up to their team for any kind of support for obvious reasons. That said, I think that there needs to be a breakthrough here, because that is one of the most critical period in a pregnant woman's life. She's going through a whole lot of things in her head. She cannot walk up to the team for support. There will be a lot of pressure that will come her way. And that is from where I don't know what the research says, but in Indian landscape or at work front, we see the number of women deciding to leave work that goes high, right? Because that's a critical period. Yeah. Some of them are advised not to take stress. Some of them consciously, you know, decide because their workplace, the environment is not conducive. So it doesn't make sense that we still, kind of haven't figured out ways to support the caregiver, the primary caregiver in the workplace. And what is it about women that no one feels the need to go an extra mile for us, right? It's hiring is one. Yes, as Simran mentioned, fill that pipeline. Let's show that, you know, we are, in fact, hiring more women at workplace. But do you know that a lot of organizations do not want to hire women who are either married or, there are questions that are asked at the interviews or during the interviews, which in some ways conclude that, okay, she may have some future, family plans. So the success rate of hiring women leaders or women at workplace in a lot of startups goes down. So I think the inherent problem lies in how Indian women have been applying for jobs, have been received at jobs. And during the first trimester, there is the maximum dropout kind of has started to be seen. And there's no way we have addressed that because there's no proper organization or support system or entities that are working or bodies that are working towards the welfare of a working woman employee who is pregnant or is looking to get pregnant. So that's the first area. And, you know, I just want to also add to that, that yes, in my case, I realized that blocking the calendar to pump milk, you know, was an issue. But I think smoking breaks are seen as acceptable norm because, well, it's because, you know, they're just kind of discussing work, right? I, on the other hand, is discussing, in my head, I'm actually looking at the well-being of my child. That is not a profitable proposition for an organization. So in many ways, I feel that HR really, really, really needs to step up and we need to have formal or informal bodies. Like you have these, you know, organizations that are awarding best workplace, you know, certificates to organizations. I want to understand that what does best workplace mean? Don't you think we need bodies or entities which are awarding organizations for supporting mom employees?
Yeah, I couldn't have agreed more. And everything you said, it just feels so true because it honestly comes from genuine experience that you've had. And you've been in a professional yourself for so many years. So you've seen it firsthand because you've gone through those phases. You must have had women around you who've gone through this. And like you said, that the first drop starts to happen right at the point of conception. Like once you get pregnant, you start seeing the number of women drop out of the workforce, which is so unfortunate because there are so many exit points for women, career women, but there are such few entry points for them. For example, once you take that exit at that point, to come back into the workforce after even after like a 4 month or a 6 month maternity break is such a challenge because things are changing so fast and nobody cares. Like I said, nobody cares for your mental health. As long as you're showing profit, that's all that matters. And women or parents today, even men are equally committed to the cause of raising the next crop, are doing the most important work for the human race. We are raising the next race of human beings. And why is that not taken into account anywhere? Why is there no mention of that in policy? Things are changing. We see people talking about it. We are seeing a lot of hybrid models being promoted now. There are some genuine companies also out there which are run by women entrepreneurs who are taking the initiative. Even then, I do feel in our country, we are far, far behind when it comes to these things. It's looked at as a weakness. Your life stage is looked upon as a weakness. And like Vaishali said, that it's so sad that people ask you in an interview that, are you looking to get married soon? Or would you be, are you thinking about starting a family? And these things shouldn't be important as long as you're a good performer. Simran, what would you like to say? Because since you are involved in the hiring process and you work with so many people, what are some of the requirements that you get and what would those anecdotes be which might help our audiences as well?
So I don't do so much of hiring as much as I work in pay. Okay, so employee pay. And I think from that point of view, and of course I'll drop on, I've hired for my own teams in the past. So I think that drawing upon experiences from there and from pay, I don't know if you know, 2-3 days back, it was equal pay day. Okay, so there was a little bit of noise on LinkedIn, a little bit of noise everywhere, right? And I was thinking that, you know what, we have this day, right? On the heels of that day, 3 days or 4 days ago, Oxfam India has released a report talking about how there is 98% gender discrimination when it comes to hiring women. Can you believe the number? You know, now I'm just saying that this is one study, okay? We can do millions of studies. We can go out there and create millions of reports. But if it's just data at the end of the day, okay, if HR professionals, if business leaders, if hiring managers do not use that data for decision making, then there is no point, you know, in having published the data. It is, people will look shocked for 10, 15, 20 minutes. Maybe they'll be shocked for like a couple of months if it's really impacting them. But then they'll go back to normal, right? So what is the solution? And what are we talking about then in terms of, you know, making a change, you know, that needs to be sustainable? That change, like I said, has to happen from the, firstly, it has to happen from the top leadership, okay? The HR really cannot do much if it's HR, which is, say, doing hiring, or if it's operational HR. So I'm in HR consulting, right? But I know we advise organizations on a million things, right? So the idea is to understand that, one, there is top leadership buy-in that needs to come, okay? And the leadership needs to walk the talk. You can't really be saying something and doing something else, okay? You know, so, I mean, that is something where we often hit a roadblock, that you have leaders who will, you know, say something and they will not put it into practice. Okay. So that's one. The second is, I think a lot of times in India, we, just like with many other things, but sorry to say, I think the only thing that scares organizations is legislation. Okay. If it's the law, you have got to do it, you know, so it's become like that. Okay. So you pass a, you know, a law saying that women need 6 months of maternity, companies will give it. Okay. You pass a law saying we need to have fresh services or facilities within the vicinity or on the premises of the company, companies will jump in and do it. Yeah. Why were they not doing it proactively? Why were they not? Yeah. There would have been so many women who would not have quit, you know, who would have probably, if these were the reasons why they would have, you know, looked for, you know, information or help or support from the organization, they would not have quit. So proactive action is the second thing. So leadership buy-in, proactive action, you know, that needs to come out very clearly. And I think lastly, I think which is a huge area, and I don't think it's changing anytime soon, is the bias. Okay, so like Vaishali said, you know, it is so open, right? You're going into an interview, you're being asked about your marital status. How many men do you actually ask about their marital status when they come for an interview? How many men do you ask when they come into an interview about, you know, how much time are you going to spend now that your wife is your wife pregnant? Is your wife planning to get, are you guys planning to get pregnant? How do you anticipate it's going to change your work profile, your work role, your time? How will you balance?
Right.
Why don't you ask them these questions, right? So you're not asking them. Correct. It's not fair to ask us these questions when we go into an interview, but that's the whole point. There is, you know, these well-meaning people who think that, okay, fine, we will take the decision for you. I had, you know, when you're going back into work, this bias is stemming from saying, we are concerned about you. If you're concerned about us, give us the choice. You know, don't take the decision for us, okay? Don't decide that, okay, X person is coming back from maternity, cannot do a high-profile project, cannot deliver on these timelines. Ask her. If she says no, it's all right. She knows what to do, right?
Yeah.
So why don't you, you know, you are not going to, you know, assume based on your bias that this is going to happen or not happen. So I think these are certain things that I feel are things that need to happen a lot more. Okay, things that need to be done in a more conscious manner. Of course, bias, like I said, doesn't change overnight. There's a lot of work that needs to be done. That's a separate exercise altogether. But I think, you know, direct manager bias when women come back into the workplace. All of these factors play a big role, you know, from that point of view.
Absolutely. And, you know, it was also as this study was conducted, like you said, this is just data, but nothing is being done about it. The women who make it to top leadership are, I think, out of the ones who get retained or who stay back in spite of all the challenges they go through, I think only a 16% are even given a chance or they're just promoted in their careers. That is shocking that such few women make it to top leadership. That is why the decision, like you said, needs to come from top management or top leadership. Doesn't happen because nobody sitting there knows what the challenges or the reality or the capabilities of this resource is. They're not even promoting them. They're not even getting a chance. They don't stand a chance. And I think the women who will remain in the workforce in the next few years because of families becoming nuclear over time, it becoming difficult to find a support system, and with the challenges of the pandemic, the good thing that has come out of the pandemic certainly is work from home culture. It is more accepted now. You can actually finish it. It has shown the world that you can truly be productive at home as well. But Besides that, there is such fear of leaving your children at a creche or like a play area because of their safety and immunity right now is something nobody wants to take a chance with. Finding help is becoming increasingly difficult because people have returned. But this is a whole dynamic. This is the whole cohesive change, the shift that has happened in the world after the pandemic that is actually pushing women further and they're quitting jobs. Also, it was seen that so many women were working double the hours because they were working when they started working from home. They were taking care of everything at home and they had their jobs too, and there was such challenge coping with that. So it just never gets easy. And what can organizations do consciously? I mean, it's easy to say that, you know, this is what you can do. Maybe you should have a creche. Maybe you should have inclusive policies. Maybe you should let the men also have a day off. But like truly, how can things be done? How can these biases be addressed at the workplace? What can women do to make themselves more comfortable in going back and owning it really, as both of you did initially?
So first of all, I want to kind of, you know, as Simran mentioned rightly, there are many organizations, especially startups, who don't even have HR in place. So the calls are taken by the founders or the co-founders. And again, if you think of the whole vicious circle, a lot of these places are co-founded by men. Yeah. I know of an organization, a wonderful organization where I worked for like 2.5 years, and it went out of the way to hire mums. The kids were allowed at work. They understood the pain points. And yet we were accountable for what we did. Such a beautiful arrangement. And yet I know of a lot of organizations where there is no HR. And it's impossible to explain to men, especially fathers, that, you know, I'm on my way. I'm pregnant. And they are still assessing your performance. There's such a gray area, by the way. The law says something and there are policies that say something else. Like Simran rightly mentioned that till the time our legislation does not put it upright, it's such a gray area. Have you ever picked up the maternity policies? Have you ever Googled what does law say about maternity leaves or a woman who is pregnant? And how, what are the policies for her? It is such a gray area that you have to discuss this with, say, a lawyer or someone to understand what are my rights? I'm pregnant. I know that there are organizations that are evaluating performance of pregnant women, which is, as I think I'm sure Simran would disagree, that that's the wrong thing to do. You know, there are hormones that are all haywired. You are not able to tell in your first trimester that you're pregnant. Anything. Yeah. And especially, you know, it's said that women typically are great mums, apparently. And I'm not being very biased, but mums as employees are far more accountable and far more productive. And they know exactly how to make things happen, right? So when I was pregnant with my first one and I joined workforce after some time, there was a gap in my resume, right? And it was so embarrassing when my when the HR the person consultant asked me that, hey, I see a gap here. How can I justify your, if you are looking for a hike, I cannot give you that hike. Unfortunately, you'll have to join at the pay which you were getting before you got pregnant, right? And that was like 3 years. The person negotiated with me and I ignored the 3 years of sabbatical I took where I was building my own portfolio. I was working as a consultant from home. I was taking care of a child and I was doing a certification in digital course so that wherever I go, I'm able to add value to that organization. And in return, that organization is asking me to join work at the pay that I was getting, say in 2010, right? And I'm looking to be hired in 2015. And I was so embarrassed. I mean, I feel like to a point, it's the onus lies, why did I feel embarrassed? Now, when I think about it, I feel like, why was I vulnerable? But back in the day, I didn't have an option, because who would have supported me? My husband would have said, I understand, it's completely up to you. Do you think he could have walked up to the organization and could have fought for me? Probably yes, but he could not. What could he have taken with him? Probably I should have taken his recommendation, and I should have taken my baby along and all the organizations I was supporting as a consultant. Right. And I should have asked them, that ask my husband, ask my baby, and ask these people how happy they are with the work I did in these 3 years, right? So my problem is that my vulnerability back in the day, I didn't have an option because there was no support. Government didn't support me. That HR consultant didn't care about it. And I needed the job. And the other point that I want to raise here is about women, mums at workplace. How quickly are they growing in the hierarchy? Most of us end up as consultants because we find that as a comfortable role for us, mainly because it's just too much of cutthroat competition and stress, which is very, very hard to manage. And it's not that we don't know how to cope with it, but a lot of times the questions are raised that, you know, millennials don't function like this. You need to change yourself a little. Again, no bias here, but there was a recent research or a report that said that single women are apparently paid better than mum employees. And mum employees, on the other hand, are really trying to meet their ends. They need a lot of financial support, which is the reason. And well, they want to keep themselves busy as much. They know how to be great leaders, yet they compromise, yet they decide to be either consultants or decide to stay in the mid-level management level. And they are compromising at every point. I somehow feel that government is not supportive, and it's some way that government is trying to tell us that, hey, you know, no child or one child policy, you know, because I don't see any support.
Right. You're absolutely right. And like you said, that it becomes so difficult. Like, we start to find ways to justify that break on our resume. Whereas we were, at that time, you were managing your time beautifully, functioning on less sleep, you know, appeasing very difficult stakeholders, which is your child and your husband. If that is not an achievement, I don't know what is. We really need to start seeing that women who come to work are so productive because they truly value their time away from their family and they want to make the most of it. I think this this insight has been missed by many, many, many top leaders, and there needs to be more dialogue on this. Like you said, that this podcast can have multiple layers. It can be about women's mental health. It can be about missed opportunities. It can be about the compromises that they make at home to excel at work, and at work to be there for their family as well. So this topic has so many layers to it. Then there is a layer of managing your home and making it safe for your child to leave them behind. Then there is a layer of dealing with the bias that you face when you go to work, of the kind of things that are said to women. I mean, I wouldn't like to name the organization, but somebody from my family works there, and she had a pregnant lady working with her. And she said that we had a meeting on the top floor and there was no lift from one level to the other. And the lady was in her third trimester. Typically in India, women take a leave like a day or two before they are to deliver, or a day or two like once they go into labor, and then come back after 6 months sabbatical, because that's the only period they get paid to be on leave. So she was still working towards the end of her last trimester. And the manager told her that, you know, don't use this card every time. Like, to say that to somebody who's expecting to climb the stairs, I don't know, like, where do we begin to teach people, or how do we get them to see that this is not a card she's playing? It's just like a few flights of stairs. You can also have the meeting downstairs. Like, how much a challenge that women face, like from the minute they wake up to the time they come back home, everything is an ordeal. What needs to change? Who should be approaching? How this bias, not only in the society, but also at the workplace can be addressed. I feel that I'm on a loop and going back to this problem again and again. But what is the solution?
So I think the solution lies, part of the solution lies with us, all right, as, you know, women. What Vaishali shared is so deeply, resonating with me, because that's exactly the reason why I took so long to come to work, come back to work, okay? That, you know,
right.
The moment I quit my job, right, my son was a year and a half. This was in mid-2014. And the reason was, again, very categorically, people who don't, you know, I think the basics of how it is to treat another human being, because there's really no other way to define insensitive behavior, to be very honest, okay?
Correct.
So I think that pretty much triggered that decision. And then, you know, what happened was that it's not like I didn't want to work. I wanted to work, right? I just did not, basically the gap in the resume kept becoming the roadblock, okay? And my own requirements,
yeah.
You know, so for me, like I said, and I have said this on another, you know, panel discussion, that I have sent out hundreds of emails, if not more, hundreds of emails to people, to companies, to consultants, saying this is after a decade of working, this is my experience. I was heading this particular area. I have multi-country experience. I have, you know, I have people manager experience. Where can I go next, you know? And nobody responded. Nobody would come back and say, and then you had negotiations, and the people who responded wanted to pay you things that you would not, you know, want to be paid at, because you obviously have come from a certain experience level. You obviously do not want to undervalue yourself. It's not about the money. It's about the viewpoint that, you know, you should get less, you know, and that is what, you know, and it took me 7 years to come back to work. Why? Because a lot of things needed to come together, you know, the right organization, the right people, the right role, the right pay. Imagine how much of, you know, how much of effort that really is for, you know, to come back. It took, like I said, you know, 7 years to come back and to have that discussion and to be sure that, you know, where I'm now, that now I'm confident that, you know, the role is right, the pay is right, the organization is right, the people are right, and I can come back and they want me, you know, and they value what I was doing all this time. So I think that is that understanding is something that we need to work on. I think the solution lies in one, us not being apologetic for the pause we took, break, pause, whatever we want to call it, okay? Because, you know, we are doing immense amount of work, you know. So what Vaishali said, you know, the amount of work that is getting done, the amount of things we are adding. Did we have these skills here that we have right now, you know, as moms, as people who are, you know, managing 100 things that we had before our children? No, we've moved, okay, and we've made progress, and that progress needs to be valued, okay? It doesn't need to be valued as us being perceived as perfect mothers. It needs to be valued as us being perceived as professionals who come back to work enriched with life experiences. Okay. So I think that is the first thing that, you know, and I think that changes with us changing that. So I have apologized for the break. I have gone into interviews and said, I'm sorry, you know, I should not have taken that break. I think that is probably what is holding me back. You know, I know that it is going to look very different in the resume. I know I've done a million things, but still the fact that I was not in a full-time role, you know, has made that big difference. So I think those things, I think the point at which we stop apologizing is the point where the solution starts coming, okay? The second thing I think where a solution lies is, like I said, like we're talking right now, okay? We need to talk more and more and more, okay? Like your podcast, like, say, panel discussions, like, say, you know, public forums. We should be talking about that break. We should be talking about that pause, you know, and we should be comfortable about the fact that, yes, we took it, but that does not compromise on our abilities as professionals. Okay. And nor are we right now, you know, compromising on our role as a parent. Okay. Because people, organizations tend to ask you this question also. Who's taking care of your children now when you're busy with work?
Yeah.
What is this question?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's just no way to... It sounds so inane, right? Like you repeat it to yourself and you're thinking, what the hell do you think I can't manage, really? You know, because you do it effortlessly, or at least in your mind, you're doing it effortlessly. You know, a lot of effort's gone in, but you are doing it, you know?
Right.
So, you know, when somebody asks you that question, you think that, you know, what kind of place are they coming from when they're asking you this question? You know, so I think the solution lies in raising this, these conversations, having these conversations, bringing it out and saying that, you know, these are the conversations that are happening. Should we be asking these questions? Should we be, you know, not changing the way we think? So I think that openness of having, you know, multiple forums to talk about these things is the second thing that is a solution. The third solution, I think...
Normalize
it. Yeah, exactly. Normalize it, you know. I mean, why is it so difficult for people to, you know, come out and say that, you know, and I know the difficulty. I've had that difficulty. So the why is not questionable, but I think we should be able to, at some point in time, be comfortable saying that we've taken that break and that does not reflect on anything else we want to do. We have the choice to do what we want to do, you know, with our lives.
The embarrassment around taking a break to be there for your children when they are really young, that needs to be something that we really need to rid ourselves of. Women need to rid themselves of. And organizations also need to stop questioning them. If she was on a maternity break, she was not sitting at home and chilling. She was working her ass off.
Correct.
So that is something that needs to be put out there, spoken about, and seen as a strength on the resume, like you said.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We definitely need to have that, you know, as a strength. Yeah.
Absolutely. Please go on. You were saying something. I think I cut you there.
No. I was just saying, yeah, that needs to be perceived as a strength, you know. And I think we need to also have more women. We need to be able to sensitize more and more women to talk about that as their strength. To talk about how to talk about it as a strength. How to talk about it as a period of, you know, of learning.
Correct. Absolutely. So, Simran, just for the benefit of our audiences, if there are women out there who are watching this podcast, who may be going back to work after a maternity break or just getting back to getting into the workforce, it just may be her first time that she might want to get into the workforce because of the requirements that she has now. Or like Vaishali said, that mothers do not have the financial, they don't have that because single women or women who don't have children are more successful. So they obviously have more financial freedom and they have more money access to them. But if a woman enters the workforce because she has children and she needs to earn more money or needs to bring in an extra income, what would your advice be to her when she's working on her resume? How can she present herself? Like you said, first, like, own it. And what are some of the things that she should be doing? How should she be approaching people? Like you said, you had sent hundreds of emails. From your own experience, people, but just to walk them through this journey, starting from maybe learning a skill, working on her resume, reaching out to people, just got a few tips, maybe 2 to 3 tips for them to take back from this chat.
So I think, I think one thing, like, you know, so like Vaishali was working on certain skills, right? I think adding that to the resume that you were, you know, you were continuing to work on certain skills, adding certain skills, whether it is through certification, whether it is through experience, nothing is unrelated. Okay. In my opinion, I think nothing is, learning is wasted. Okay. I opened a healthy baking enterprise. I work in HR. It has no, if you look at the surface, at the surface level, it has no connect to each other.
Correct.
Right. But, you know, the fact that my healthy baking enterprise and the fact that I have a community which spans so many thousands of women across different geographies, it's not easy. You know, managing a virtual network, it's not easy to keep them engaged. It's not easy to keep them, you know, coming up with ideas, doing different initiatives, getting everybody involved across different cities, rolling it out in a city at a city or a country level. Those are things that, you know, those are skills. You know, it has got nothing to do with the topic like healthy baking or things like that. It is a skill. There are certain skills. But I think, like I said, you know, so I think we need to spend time. Everybody needs to spend time identifying where are those skills coming from. So for me, it came from, say, creating that community, you know. So join those dots. Okay. For that, we have to sit and think what we have done in that career pause, which is bringing up certain skills and highlight them as skills, you know. I mean, I was hesitant to mention healthy baking in my resume because it is predominantly HR, right? But I have mentioned it because, I mean, I have it written there because I know that's a, it adds value. It gives me certain skills which I bring to my current job also, You know, so I think that connect has to come out, you know, clearly in the resume. Don't hesitate to, you know, put that through. So, for example, like I said, you know, so we will say, okay, you know what? She bakes. It's a hobby. So that's, you know, you're negating the fact that it's not got to do with, the idea is not about she bakes, it's a hobby. The idea is that she has set up a community which is bringing, say, X change or Y change, all right? And not to, not just to the community, but to herself. Okay, so I think those factors have to come out. You know, in your resume, you need to be able to connect those dots with whatever is seemingly unrelated to the skills that is, that it's bringing to the workplace. Okay, that's the second thing that I would say, apart from, you know, highlighting, say, any certifications and all of that that you've done, you know, skills that you've added in this manner. The third thing is, I think the fact that we don't network, okay, is a big thing. And I don't blame women for it, because I think seriously, everybody's short on time. You know, I just see myself and I think I'm short on time constantly. Okay, so I just feel that every woman, especially if you're working, has just no time to figure out, you know, how do I network? So I think what that does is it sort of puts us on a little bit of a back foot. Okay, so the only solution, to be very honest, is to carve that time specifically out and be very, very disciplined about it. That, okay, fine, I'll spend just half an hour, but I will speak to two, three, four women, or not really women, but leaders, or, you know, somebody in the same area that I work in, or the same community that I work in. I mean, in HR, I would go out, say, whether it's through LinkedIn or whether any other platform, but I will take out that half an hour. It's just half an hour, believe me. And then, you know, slowly it starts building your network. It starts building your, you know, you come back, okay, in ways, you know, that you would not have otherwise anticipated. So I think that little bit of time and, you know, factoring that into your weekly schedule, your daily is impossible, let me tell you. Daily is impossible. So, you know, getting that, you know, take small steps of doing it, you know, maybe for half an hour in a week, is very important to build that network. You know, you should be able to. And I think the good part that the pandemic has done, while it has actually, I completely agree with you, it's put most women on the back foot because they're managing multiple things, you know, and but the good part has been that they're able to work virtually. And I think that is sort of a big boon from a networking point of view. We don't have to step out anywhere now. Like, I don't have to go to an event for sure to be able to meet 10, 15, 20, 30 interesting people who will contribute to my career or my learning. So I'm able to do that. I think those things will definitely, those are things that I would probably share as takeaways.
Those are like amazing tips, and I'm sure it will be very helpful. Like you said, we often forget to just network or to stay connected to people while we're on a break. We just completely isolate ourselves and just get knee deep into diapers and nappies and just forget that there is a world outside of this, and the baby babbles are all that you hear. So, and it actually is amazing at that time if you're able to have a conversation with an adult, an intelligent conversation with an adult. So that just, you know, it can really lift your whole day and it can make you feel really good. So that's a superb tip. And I think that would be something that a lot of women will take away from this conversation. This is what you can do when you're going back. But once you're back, I would like to hear this from maybe Vaishali now, because she also went back after the maternity leave. That it's such a difficult time to leave your child. There's so much separation anxiety, and just, you know, you're so hazy from that long break, and you probably haven't had any rest or any sleep during that period. And here you are trying to win back your position, and already mentally, I can say that, like, it's safe to say that most of them are feeling like really like an imposter there. That, do I know enough? You know, has someone else taken my place, or am I still holding my ground? So, Vaishali, what tips would you give to mothers who are in that stage where they're just about to join their work, like join their full-time role again post-maternity?
So really, post-maternity depends on how soon or how late that person decides to join the workforce. First of all, I want to say that do not feel sorry or apologetic. I know Simran has felt that, I felt that. But I think we've now become very thick-skinned and we've carved our own paths. In some ways, that break, which I don't know why we keep calling it break, and that first thing that we need to take out from our dictionary is the break. That period is a beautiful period, not just from the point of view of raising a human, which is going to contribute to your country's GDP, by the way. I always say it that way. But also the fact that that is the period where we also realize that I'm good at community building. I am able to build that skill and I can add that to my resume, and I'm going to go hunting for such kind of jobs. For me, I built the Champa Tree, which is largely a parenting platform. And, all the good people and the startups that were in the baby space, they saw me only because of the Champa Tree. And then they connected my resume to my existing portfolio and they said, we would like to hire this person because I think that person can do a lot more for our brand. So you have to figure something that, and it happens. It will come. You will find a way to build your resume because, you don't give up. I don't think moms give up easily. That's my faith and confidence in, the whole motherhood. So you will figure that one thing. For example, for me right now, I feel like I want to do something which is very impact-led. I've built a platform. I've done this. I've found roles that came my way, which were very much aligned. I want to now do something which has some impact. And I'm going to work towards it. So probably if I feel that, okay, now my calling is something to do with impact-led initiatives, I will find that. So my only advice to mums is that have faith and confidence and something will definitely work. Do not lose hope because one consultant said, explain this break, or some other consultant was impatient. And if you're getting a no as a response from everywhere, you question them on email or pick up the phone and ask them that what is it about my resume that you haven't liked? Today, even organizations are equally scared. None of these organizations will tell you, oh, it's because of this or that related to your maternity. And that is where they are being made conscious, right? We have to make them conscious. And this is the only step towards, you're inching towards building faith and confidence in yourself. Pick up whatever comes your way. If you're not getting the right kind of pay, then you figure ways to, or you kind of, I'm not saying that you kind of cope with it. You find ways of how you can negotiate that if I'm getting half of what I was making in my previous organization, then I'm only going to clock half the hours. I'm going to look for another option and I'll make it very clear that if you want me, this is what I bring to the table. But you have to have that faith and confidence in yourself. And also just remember that work's going to be there. What is also equally important for you is your child and your family. Because a lot of moms come under this pressure of, oh, I want to, suddenly after a year of taking care of the child, they feel like, I'm done now, I have to do something for myself. That's also good enough. But think again, most of the times your answers will lie in your head that, I was very impulsive, I should stay, you spent more time with the child or whatever. So listen to what your gut says and do exactly, because your intuition will never guide you in the wrong direction. So this is my advice. Mom's guilt happens. Do not feel guilty about mom's guilt and be very confident and figure a way that works for you. Do not compromise. And even if you have to compromise, recognize the signals that, okay, I think I've compromised enough and now it's time to move on. And, there are enough jobs and there is enough that you can do in today's day and age. So have faith in yourself.
Absolutely. I mean, you've said it so beautifully. And like you said, there are enough jobs. There are recruiters out there. There are so many startups that have come into being now. And they all need people who can immediately join. And there is no bigger resource than the woman who's coming back to work after maternity leave, who doesn't have a notice period to serve, and she can absolutely join right away. So even recruiters and HR managers need to look at this and hire these women. I think that's why a lot of women are applying to startups. And a lot of startups are also, especially like you said, in the parenting space, they are very kind to working women. They understand because they are serving that particular TG as well. So hiring your TG would be an amazing idea because they become your evangelists eventually. So that's like a really smart way and a good marketing strategy for several startups out there which want to get into the parenting space. Having spoken about this, from the both of you, if you could name some organizations which are mom-friendly or are inclusive and diverse and are open to taking women post their maternity leave, or the infamous or the not the correct terminology, most likely the break, the maternity break that women take, which is hardly a break, it's no vacation. Let's just make that, let's get this out there. But after you take that time off to take care for your child, when you want to get back into the workforce, what are some good organizations who understand this and how and who also offer flexi hours? If you could name a few for our audiences who are watching.
So I'm going to go first because I know of quite a few organizations. I know that Slurp Farm is one such organization, and I know Simran will agree because she's also worked very closely. It's a beautiful organization. All these startups which are operating in the space, Mama Earth, Moms Co, they are consciously making an effort to hire, evangelists, and also take care of their employees. By the way, it's not just about pregnant moms or moms per se, but they really, really, you know, want to make sure that the senior leadership is owned by mom, because that is where the difference lies, right? We want more and more of co-founders and founders who are in our, you know, category, because that's when Indian landscape will change, especially from the point of view of working moms, point of view. I think even Rabbitat for that matter is probably one such organization. And I think I won't say that it's just the organization which is being very smart in their hiring, but I think we've also been very smart in identifying such organizations and upskilling ourselves and building our skills in a way. No more of this playing that card of, oh, you know, that company didn't hire me, but I have been smart enough. Or I think the two of you in this room are equally smart enough to know that this is what it takes. And also, for me, even established organizations, for example, the agency where I worked, Edelman, they made sure that the employees who go on maternity get enough, the incentives are great. I'm not sure if the kind of incentives that certain organizations give are fulfilling enough. But there are a lot of agencies also that are making a good effort. So that's what I have experienced.
That's great. I think you've given the audiences like several names, and also like it can be backed with research and they can go in with a similar organization. And like you said, that women-led organizations or women's representation in top leadership is something that they should probably be looking at. Maybe it should be really increased so that there is more room for women to come into this. And they understand, like I said, being in the same category, having been through similar life stages, there is a sensitivity there. And they understand also your core strengths, and they can assign you work accordingly. So thank you, Vaishali. I think that was amazing and that was very insightful. Coming to Simran, do you have a few names for us as well?
Yeah, sure. I'll start with Aeon. I work with Aeon now. So the reason, like I said, you know, I really felt that it was the right organization because, you know, you're seeing leadership. So there is very visible women leadership, representation. Okay. And very importantly, I think those roles are not roles which typically organizations would say, oh, this is a, this is a support role. Okay, like what happens is typically, I think in a lot of organizations, even when they're hiring, they tend to slot you. Okay, that you are women will typically be in this role, men will be in this role. HR may, more women are there and all of that. We are in consulting, right? So Aeon is a financial services organization, one of the largest HR consulting firms in the world. Okay, the APAC CEO is a woman. Okay, now CEOs are business heads. Okay, they are not support functions. They're business heads, leading functions, driving revenue growth, having direct impact on business line, okay? So which is what I'm trying to say, that, you know, identification of the right organization where you are seeing visible female leadership in key business roles, okay? Those are important right. organizations to look out for, okay? So, you know, so like I said, so for me, like, you know, Aon stood out very clearly. I've worked in the past in Aon, so I know that they had people-friendly policies, but this was much before I got married also. So, you know, I think, so it was different at that point in time, but rejoining was a very easy, like I said, very easy decision because they can continue the discussion and conversations again. I think that is also a point when you have those interviews, you see what areas are they discussing, okay? And you see the comfort level of the leadership team with their families, okay? They are not stuck. They consciously block time for personal things. They consciously block time for, you know, whether it is, whether it is for being in their children's schools, whether it is for going for medical appointments with their kids, whether it is for just going out for dinner with friends. Right. So I'm just saying that, you know, it's very visible. OK, the kind of because it's visible and it's visible consistently. So it's not something which is put on. OK, so I think that helps, you know, then there are organizations like, you know, I personally, again, I have not worked in them, but from hearsay, from friends, I know that HUL has a very good Unilever has a very good return to work program, which is very, very good. I have applied for it myself. And I know that they have it's a very sound process of, you know, getting women back into the workplace and also giving them options, like you said, flexi hours, you know, so flexible hours,
yeah.
You know, you choose how much you're going to be able to commit to and work. They have that program in India, you know, so, you know, it's not like it's a global program only. So they have it in India. Wipro has a lot of programs that they are rolling out for women who are returning to work. Okay. You know, Dr. Reddy's has an excellent, you know, and this is before Krish was legislated. Okay. They've had, you know, a nursery and a creche, and women could, you know, leave their baby, 6 month old baby there and go back, walk across the campus, go feed, come back, you know. So, you know, there are these just a few that I know of immediately because I know of friends who work here or I'm working there now. But I think but you need to do that, you know, you need to observe, you know. So just don't go by what's really just put out there. Find out from people, talk to people, see what their leadership representation looks like, see what their leaders are doing. You'll see at least some of that information is publicly available. So it should definitely help.
Absolutely. That is a great tip. Thank you so much, Simran and Vaishali. You guys, I'm sure that this podcast is just one of the first few that we will be doing on this topic. And I think there's so much more that needs to be said about this. This conversation can really be endless, but I really want to thank you on behalf of the entire team and from Meet the Mom podcast for taking the time and sharing such useful tips with our audiences. Thank you. It was a pleasure talking to both of you.
Thank you so much.